hope, done sensibly, is that the incentives that for investment and economic growth will bring in enough growth and therefore tax revenue.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And here we are in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Steve Bertrand on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks very much for tuning in. I appreciate that on this spring-like, sort of spring-like day. I have to say, you know, our studios now, the Skyline Studio high above the Chicago River, and the boats are coming back. I look out on the river all winter long. There was one lone boat being frozen in, sort of locked in by ice, but this week they're starting to come back, and I think we're going to talk about that a little bit later this week on the program. Frank Sennett will be here a little bit later as well to talk about the future of Medina Temple. Also, United Airlines, you know, they fly a lot of these Boeing jets that are under scrutiny, but we'll talk about that a little bit with Frank, but also about the fact that United is going to keep their headquarters in the Willis Tower. But right now, we start usually on Wednesdays with Terry Savage and talk personal finance, Wall Street, things like that. Follow her at terrysavage.com. She's on a phone line today. Terry, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Glad to be with you again.
All right, so I'm looking at Boeing stock. You know, Canada just now is the latest country to prohibit the MAX 8 flights over its country, leaving the U.S. and a few others. Boeing, which has suffered greatly in the past couple of days, is actually, well, right now it's unchanged. It had been in positive territory a little bit. Right now it's unchanged for the day. The Dow, however, is up about 182 points on the day. So tell me first what you make of Boeing stock and then the Dow in general today.
You know, I think it's a personal thing. I'm surprised that the U.S. Transportation Safety Agency has not restricted those flights. I'm flying in next week, you can be sure. You know, Southwest has the biggest fleet of them. And you can be sure that I check to make sure at seatguru.com whether it's one of those flights.
Well, would you not do it?
Yeah, I would have changed my flight.
You would have.
For sure. Yes. And I think that, you know, it just astounds me. I think Boeing has an obligation. The question is, it's too much at risk for the company not to make some kind of a statement. I think this is a real corporate social. We didn't talk about talking about this, but I think right. This is a real corporate social responsibility issue right here. And I'm going to be waiting. I would imagine it won't even be 24 hours till Boeing comes out with some kind of an explanation. Liability is one thing for them, but the fact is, this is a corporate social responsibility issue. I'm surprised they haven't said something more significant.
But
to
we
them.
Don't know. We'll we don't know that the two were related yet. I'm right. I mean, this is.
Yeah, but what you know, you just don't bet 170 or 80 people at a time in on the same issue right. Happening the same way. You know, so I think it's just a real corporate social responsibility issue. But you're watching the stock market. I learned something this week that makes me giggle. When this was explained to me, I went.
It wasn't that I like bubble baths.
I started giggling.
What?
It was. Look, you know, I've been writing for forever. My columns over 30 years. Every year in January, I managed to write something about the January barometer, created by Yale Hirsch of the Stock Traders Almanac in the early 70s. I've known Yale since the early 70s, as a matter of fact. We're all old. And it is an indicator, the January barometer, with one of the most incredible track records, somewhere up around 80% accuracy.
So
it said, first of all, that January, as goes January, predicts the whole year, and typically the first week in January has an almost equally good record of predicting how January will go. So I never got around to writing about it this year, but I was thinking, wow, you know, the stock market really crashed in December, the biggest one-day point loss ever, Christmas Eve, and then soared in January and February. At the end of the first 2 months, the S&P 500 index was up 17.5%. I mean, the average annual return of that index is a little over 10%. So I was getting around to thinking about it when I read the most interesting item, and I called the guy up who wrote it, and I will tell you, this is really interesting. Jeff DiMasso of AdvisorInvestments.com said, hey, that January barometer is a bunch of baloney. He said, first thing he did is he looked at the historic first 2 months of every year since 1926.
Okay.
And said, you know what? The first 2 months of the year have no impact about how the next months will play out. In fact, there were only, this was the seventh time since 1926 that large cap U.S. stocks gained more than 10% during the two-month period at the start of the year. And for the rest of the year, and all those seven times, there was such a wide range of results in the final 10 months. One year, the maximum was, one year had a gain of 16.7% for the year, and that was in 91. And one year, 1931, the market lost nearly 52%.
So
he said, you know what, that's baloney. There's no predictive ability. And I said to him, but wait, the January barometer, let me get my, you know, every year I get the Stock Trader's Almanac. Oh, my goodness, we're up, we're really up dramatically. And here's what DeMayo said to me, and you've got to read this column up at Terry Savage. If you use the January barometer every year since 1976 when the Vanguard S&P Stock Index Fund came out, the barometer was correct in predicting the results for the whole year 69% of the time. Why? That's really significant. And then he said to me, but Terry, if you just started out every year saying stocks will go up, you would be correct 81% of the time.
So
think about it.
Throw it out the window.
The stock market has an upward bias. Most years the stock market is up. I mean, take a look if you ever look back. You know, the Dow Jones Industrial Average going back to 1926.
Okay, I want to ask you a question. So, you know, we talked about how the S&P 500 is up 17.5% so in the first 2 months of this year. Well, a lot of that is because it absolutely tanked in December, right? So why is it? What time frame should we look at? I mean, we fall into measuring our gains year to year, December 31st to, or January 1st to December 31st, which I don't know what that tells us if, you know, we're looking at great numbers in January.
You're so right, Steve. You're so cool.
So how do we look at it?
This is the point. This is absolutely the point. We know that there has never been a 20-year period where you would have lost money, even with large company stocks, diversified portfolio, like the S&P 500 with dividends reinvested, even adjusting for inflation. Going back to 1926, 29 to 49, 52 to 72, there has been no 20-year period. So the first thing we know is, why bother with any one-year period, just like you said? If you are going to invest and stick to a plan and keep investing regularly and not get chickened out by crazy markets like 2008 and 2009 or whatever comes ahead, then you're going to be fine. Now, the caveat to that is that's cool when you're younger and you're accumulating money, but it's not so cool when you're 62 or 66 and you think you're going to retire next year or two years from now, because then you might be forced to start withdrawing your required distributions and the need for money to live on, that's your retirement fund, in the next couple of years. And that money doesn't have a 20-year time horizon, which is why you diversify out of stocks and get more conservative. And then here's the final thing, Cinema is coming on a break. But the big question
is...
Oh, sorry. Okay, well, then let me get to this big question of this is, so if the stock market was up 17.5% for the first 2 months, and the average annual return is 10%, and we've had 10 years of a spectacular bull market.
We're in for
a dive. I don't have the answer to this question, but I'll leave it with you. Should we be being more conservative now? I could have said that to you 2 years ago, and you would have missed out on a lot.
All right. That's Terry Savage. Terry, we're going to take a break, come back. And when we come back, you know, a lot of people send their kids to school by actually saving money, not paying bribes. We'll talk about saving for college. Terry Savage on a phone line now. Okay, Terry, 529 cost plans for college, right? Those are the things that are much easier to buy and to sort out than we tend to give credit for.
Well, I'm about to not make some friends or unmake some friends. You know, recently the SEC has been asking investment advisory firms to look into whether they're charging way too much, selling the wrong share classes, same funds, but classes of shares that have a lot more costs. And just this week, the SEC announced it was got back $125 million for investors. Now the focus is on the cost of your 529 college savings plan. And I will cut right to the chase of this column up at terrysavage.com. The same plans, we're not talking about prepaid, but we're talking about Bright Start in Illinois. The exact same plan is sold by financial advisors who charge fees And you can go to brightstartsavings.com and buy it on your own. And in Illinois, if you opt into the Bright Start direct sold plan, you know, brightstartsavings.com, your management fees for age-based funds are 0.07%. The actively managed options charge as much as 0.72%. But if you use a broker-sold plan in Illinois, the cost could be as much as 1.86%. That is how the plan compensates salespeople for selling them to you. Now, you might have a fiduciary fee-only financial advisor who says, gosh, put some money in a 529. That financial advisor with your best interest at heart will say, go to brightstartsavings.com and open an account. But you compensate brokers for giving you advice.
Well,
good advice is always worth it. But for the same thing, you can do this yourself, folks. Be aware of costs in college savings.
I was going to say, you go to brokers, you go to financial advisors for their advice. And if their advice is to do this, you know, and you wouldn't have done it without their advice, they're entitled to some compensation for their advice.
Exactly why I suggest a fee-only financial advisor, a fiduciary, who will fully disclose all fees and commissions and incentives and put your interests first. So if you do go to one of the great fee-only, you can go to fee-only.org to search them or wealthramp.com to be matched with them. Fiduciary financial advisors will say, in any state, use your state's financial plan because you get a tax break. It's a really good plan. Or don't use your state's plan because it's not a really good plan. But then go do it yourself and save some money. A full percentage point off the returns every year really adds up.
All right, you can read that column at terrysavage.com. A website she suggests as well in the column is savingforcollege.com. Terry, thanks for joining us today. We'll talk again in a week.
Absolutely. I'll be there in your studio next week.
Can't wait for that. Thanks very much, Eric Rung. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank, and we thank them for that. 12:38. All right, on a phone line now is Frank Sennett from Crane Chicago Business, and Frank's Northwestern Wildcats in the Big Ten Tournament tonight. They're playing in the first night, which isn't a great sign, Frank. Welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thank you, Steve. Yeah, it's been a little bit of a fall for Wildcat basketball, hasn't it?
You got to fall before you can... Well, I don't know if that's true. Anyway, next year will be a better year. Maybe we'll beat Illinois tonight and see what happens after that. So good luck there. I was talking to Terry Savage here just a few minutes ago, and she's in Florida. She's flying back. She's already checked her flight to see if she is on Max 8, 737 Max 8 Boeing jet, and she said she would change her flight if she were. Would you change your flight if you were?
Well, it's funny. I was looking at some flight plans coming up, a trip my wife was going to take, and I looked because she's flying an airline that does fly the Max jet, and I did look and make sure that that wasn't there. You don't need that extra little bit of worry when you're flying, and you know, it remains to be seen what kind of software fixes may need to happen for that to be as ship shape as we all hope it can be.
I'm flying to Mexico on Saturday morning early with a group, and so I have a little less control over it, but I don't think I would have changed it. I think I have enough confidence that I would have been okay with it. I don't know. But regardless, you know, we follow Boeing, of course, because they're a Chicago company. They were a leading Dow component last year. They've been dragging down the Dow certainly this week. But, you know, you watch business. They're in a tough position right now.
Yeah, Canada grounded them today, adding to the growing list of companies that are grounding those MAX jets, so 737 MAX 8s. Joe Cahill in Planes wrote, what I think is holding up pretty well yesterday, but it's a make-or-break moment for Boeing and its CEO because they are putting, you know, all their chips in the basket of the MAX 8 being just fine rather than doing the belt and suspenders approach that a lot of countries are doing. Let's ground it while we make sure, you know, where we see that there's two crashes. We've had Boeing hold the line, as has the FAA, And as Cahill said, you know, they better hope they're right.
Yeah, I guess so. So Southwest flies a lot of them. I know United, American does as well. United, not as much, but they certainly do have a few. United in the news and Cranes today, and they made the announcement public today, I should say, about their staying in their headquarters at the Willis Tower. They had looked at some more campus-like settings, but they're going to stay put where they are now.
Yeah, and this is a lot about leverage, and this is probably the biggest impact of the Amazon search for Amazon headquarters, too, that consumed much of the large cities of the country over the last year. So United had an option to opt out and go to a different space. And when Amazon came a-calling, you know, there were these big developments that were trying to woo Amazon. And United basically flew in its slipstream and
nice.
Checked out all these great, hey, you know, thanks for noticing that I'm working hard here. And they said that it helped in the financial negotiations with Willis, that they had these great options, right, that Amazon right. didn't use, but they were out there. So I think, you know, United was put in a position of some good leverage to make an extension deal, and they've announced that they are going to extend their lease through March 2033. And it's a huge win also for Blackstone Group that owns Willis Tower that's, you know, put so much money, $670 million into the renovation so far, banking on the fact that it would be an appealing property for, you know, huge tenants like United. So right now, it is kind of one of those rare win-win situations.
All right, so Danny Ecker wrote the story, and Danny was on last week, but I think the most important story, sentence or line in Danny's story is the last one, the most important graph, where he talked to the spokesman there about naming rights to Willis Tower, because the naming rights are in 2025, they're up. United is by far the biggest tenant there. They just renegotiated this big deal, and the comment was, well, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But it seems to me like all signs point to the fact that we might soon be calling it the United Tower. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's right down the road from the United Center, so it seems to make some sense.
It'd be
right?
Like and properties aligned to, in Monopoly, right? They'd be all right next to each other.
Exactly. You build some hotels, you know. But I think that, you know, there's more connection to the city with United than Willis, so I think people might embrace it.
Speaking of connection to the city, Medina Temple has been up for sale for a while now. I think it was built in the 20s for the Shriners. I took my kids to the circus there. I've walked through it when it was selling home goods for Bloomingdale's. But now they're talking, well, the article says that they're talking about maybe putting a health club in there or something like that. But really, it sounds like they're trying to open up their options wide for a bunch of different developments in order to get this building sold.
That's right. It's been the Bloomingdale's furniture store, but it's been on the market for a while. And so they've had people kicking the tires in various spaces. And I think that the story is saying, LB Galoon's reporting that, you know, they're trying to widen out the zoning to encompass some of these folks that have been kicking the tires on the temple, and that could be a health club, a fitness center, what they call a lifestyle club with food. So, you know, it could be dancing and into the night in Medina.
It's kind of weird, though, that Bloomingdale's owns the building but not the land the building is on, so that makes things a little trickier.
That's right. River North landlord Albert Friedman does own the land underneath the building, so he could be well positioned to buy out Bloomingdale's when they do sell. He'd be a logical buyer for the building, and he could also use his position to exert leverage in a sale to another party. So that's an interesting aspect of this, because the building, you know, is owned, but the land is leased.
It's a great Chicago building. Next time you go by, take a moment to look at it, because it's one of those things I think that too often we just pass by and don't appreciate. Just like Frank Sennett, I passed by him the other day and I didn't stop to appreciate him, and I feel badly for it now.
Well, I appreciate you, Steve.
We'll talk next week. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day.
Dun, 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun.
That's what the Chicago Symphony Orchestra might be hearing in their head as they settle into the second day of the strike over contract negotiations, and they want competitive pay compared to other orchestras. The Chicago Federation of Musicians Local 10208 represents the orchestra members, and it sounds like they're in for the long haul, because four performances have already been canceled from March 14th to March 16th. Their last strike was only 2 days in 2012, but before that, a 15-day strike happened in 1991. Minor tones. Minor tones indeed. And not as minor, but still a bummer. University of Chicago's MBA program slipped from the top slot in the U.S. rankings. It was Poindexter's over at University of Pennsylvania Wharton School of Business took the top spot. And we tied Harvard for third, so I guess it's not that bad. But you know, a stroke of the ego is nice every now and then. Oh well, time to get back to the grindstone. I'm Bennett Wake Knight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN 1252 on this Tuesday afternoon. All right, let's go to Austin, Texas, South by Southwest, with an old friend. Will Flanagan is on a phone line. Will, you knew him from Chicago Inno. He works for American Inno. And, well, he travels the country bringing technology news to the world. Will, welcome back to the Biz Lunch. How are you, friend?
Hey, Steve. Good to be back.
I have to say, first of all, congratulations. I hear you're a new father.
Oh, my God. These things are easy, aren't they?
Wait a minute. So how old is the baby?
She is turning a month old on Friday.
Congratulations. She's a month old, and then you skip town. That is a pretty amazing thing to do.
Yeah, it was. This took a lot of internal selling, but we got an invite to hold a session here at South By, and it's a great place to be if you're in the business of technology.
All right, so I'm reading around about it, and usually I'm finding articles about it's going to be about this year, or this is the big theme this year. I'm not picking up, you know, any sort of central theme out of South By Southwest. What's it about this year?
Yeah, you know what? I've been thinking a lot about that as well as we've kind of been working the festival, and you know what I think the theme is? I think they've kind of eschewed a theme this year in place of just a pure celebration of tech and innovation. I think a lot of the conversation surrounding tech over the past, you know, months and year, it's cybersecurity, it's data privacy, any headlines surrounding Facebook is negative.
Right.
And I think it's this concept of big tech, it's at its most, kind of from a public consensus standpoint, it's at its most negative. So to me, this has just been the big takeaway here at South By this year is it's all positive. It is a very positive lens of technology. It's robots pouring you coffee and virtual reality displays and people hooked up to sensors that allow their dancing bodies to be displayed on giant screens. And there's not a ton of conversation surrounding the, like, is everything moving too fast? It's really about just look how cool this development is.
You know, it's a really great point you bring up because a lot of the news is dark and we kind of lost sight of the magic. So they're celebrating the magic in Austin this year.
Yeah, and there's certainly a lot of conversations regarding the breakout sessions and panels. You can find some of those really interesting conversations that are tackling, you know, data privacy and ed tech development. And it really does a great job of, if you're interested in this one really niche thing, there's probably a panel for it here. But just walking around the booths and the trade shows, it's almost like a kind of, yes, we're aware of all of the negatives, but look at how cool all of this stuff is. And it is cool. Steve, this is the most cliche thing in the world, but I am on the phone with a cup of coffee that a robot made me. And I mean, that's kind of South by Southwest in a, it's ridiculous. It's over the top and it's really, really cool.
It would only be South by Southwest. The picture would be completed if there maybe was a punk music band playing behind you or something like that.
Exactly. It is. Finding a quiet place in Austin during South By is almost impossible.
Is this the first time you've been there, or have you been there before?
I've been there before, and I do think that's been my takeaway, is in years past there really was, I would say last year was interesting. It felt like every other sentence was kind of cryptocurrency and people thinking about blockchain. And that has kind of, as that bubble has at least come back to earth a little
bit. Right.
There's less of that. There's a little bit of XR, Steve, which is kind of just VR and AR all rolled into one. So it's a combination of hardware and software, and you're bringing technology into the room and back online. So it's just a way to kind of capture how, you know, you're going to be interacting. You're going to have LeBron James transported right in your living room dribbling the basketball.
All right, so Will Flanagan started here at Chicago Inno and then it moved on. And one of the things you do is you expand the Inno brand to elsewhere. I know that the Inno's now in Madison and several other markets. We've got about 30 seconds to a minute left. tell me about the temperature of the country when it comes to tech news, tech curiosity.
That's a great question. So quickly, I would say just in the 3-4 years we've been covering kind of national tech in between the coasts, every market has gotten a lot smarter about not benchmarking themselves against Silicon Valley. Richmond is no longer trying to be the next Silicon Valley, or Tampa is not trying. They're just trying to be the better Tampa, the better Richmond, the better Cincinnati, and everyone has a more kind of level-headed approach to what they're trying to build, and that's been a very refreshing trend we've seen.
Will Flanagan from American Inno. It was great to talk to you. I hope we can talk again more often. And sincerely,
yes, of course.
Listen, bud, you're going to be a great dad, and I'm really happy
thanks.
For you. All right, enjoy yourself.
Oh, man. Yeah, thank you so much, Steve.